Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast
on the left.
Rise from your glaze.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Oh, man, I'm so full of food. That's what I want to be, man. But you know, I think what's nice about this holiday is that you can really sit and think about, like, you know, while you've got that big plate of food in front of you, all the different types, depending on whether or not, if you're lucky enough to have a plate of food during this time period, if you're lucky enough to have a belly filled. I said, also imagine just fucking eating all of that and then just, like, looking over and just seeing just, like, a pile of, like, severed cocks.
Well, I don't know why you would want to do that when you have a full stomach. Well, now, why would you want to do that? Why would you eat Thanksgiving dinner and then look over at your uncle and see him as a pile of cocks?
Not to be too, like, serial killer hack joke about it, but imagine being Jeffrey Dahmer. At some point, you know, during his berserker mode, there was a Thanksgiving where he maybe went out with some coworkers or did something.
He went to his parents' house in Ohio.
Or he went to Mad Planet and they probably had like a Thanksgiving, like, you know, some bars, like, you know, they'll have a Thanksgiving.
There was a strip club in Lubbock called Players that used to have a hot dog buffet.
Yeah, that's when you get your hot dog. I was just going to say, that's when they bring out the boiled hot dogs.
Eat till you puke. But Jeffrey Dahmer, at some point, probably did have a full Thanksgiving dinner with a bunch of his other weird creeps and then went back to his apartment to see all of this fall, all of this human meat that he's supposed to eat, and he knows, I shouldn't have, instead of going out to eat, I probably should have had leftovers.
Right, because he has all of those severed penises. This is the last podcast on the left, everyone. I am Ben with Marcus and Henry. This is a best of episode. Why did Henry, Marcus, and I mention Jeffrey Dahmer? Because today's episode, in honor of Thanksgiving, the day that we are thankful and we get to be fed, we are going to be talking about cannibalism.
Oh, yeah.
And all of the great times we have discussed cannibalism on this show, from the Donner Party to Jeffrey Dahmer and everyone in between.
Yum, yum, yum. It's all about being hungry enough to eat your fellow man, or simply just curious.
Just taste it. Yeah.
Just maybe. Yeah. I know for this Thanksgiving, me and Carolina, we're having a solo one at the house. We're not having Thanksgiving. We're having Winesgiving. Come on.
Stop.
Oh, my God. I'm going to shoot you.
Tell me about that. I always what you should do, Marcus? You and Carolina should get those matching big glasses that fit one whole bottle of wine in it. And like, it's just one glass.
One glass.
That's what I do with my 25 ounces of Bud Light. It's just one beer. No, Marcus, in all seriousness, you and Carolina need to eat.
We're gonna eat. We're gonna have a cooking day. Just
your
husband
and weight of 113 pounds. Please, God, eat food.
We got husband and wife cooking day with a Winesgiving. Come on,
okay. We're like literally doing as small as possible. But you know, I'm excited to do this year. I want to do stuffed shells. I want to do full Italian with it. I'm going to have like stuffed shells on the side.
Nothing says Thanksgiving like stuffed shells. All right, everyone, enjoy this episode of Cannibalism.
No. Just chop, top cut.
Live from your glade.
So people throughout history have just been enjoying consuming other people's body parts.
Yeah, and now it's just the most reviled thing that you can do.
Was it always considered reviled? I mean, obviously it was a point of victory. And then, but what about civilizations that were starving? I mean, they have to eat other people for good reasons.
Obviously. And there were places, they were like, there was one tradition that if there were a mighty warrior had died, you ate his body out of pity and consideration for him. So there was a lot of like people would eat
if their chief died, they would eat him. Mm. Or if, like, a big thing is, like, if your children's die, like, if your children die of, like, natural causes, like, way early, like, they would eat the children out
and
of
that,
respect.
That sounds very good. I imagine children meat falls right off the bone.
Apparently.
Right?
I got really into researching what the human meat tasted like, because a lot of guys won't... you know, most of our reports of what human meat tastes like comes from, like, Dahmer and, like, these right. people. But, like, oh, you got to take their stuff with a grain of salt.
Yeah, Dahmer was from Wisconsin. He put ketchup on everything.
Oh, yeah. It just tastes like cheese curds. Yeah, he put butter all over the bun before eating it.
And the man's palate was just ruined by years at that chocolate factory.
Oh, absolutely.
You can't get any of the finer hints. But a sociologist he wrote this book called Jungle Laws, where it's like he traveled with this African tribe and he watched a cannibalism ritual, mm-hmm. and then proceeded to order a very recently dead cadaver. This is in Paris.
Okay.
And roasted it on a spit and ate it. And he said that you could compare it to really, really good veal.
Oh, see,
veal.
I'd always heard pork.
Pork is just like... The reason why he compares it to veal is because it's the way it's cooked. When mm-hmm. human meat is cooked, it turns a gray color like lamb or veal does.
Oh.
And then it has that sort of a little bit of a gamier, mealier taste,
yeah.
but smells like fucking delicious cooked rump roast steak. Yeah.
It sounds like it would be great with a curry.
Yeah.
That would Ooh, human yeah. curry mm, sounds yeah. really powerful. Yeah. So this guy was in France. He got a cadaver.
This was in like the year 1909.
Hey,
where
Barry,
like,
what you cooking there? Hey, come on over for the barbecue.
Come over. It's fucking human dick.
You know what?
That's great. You know what, buddy? I'm going to watch the Saints game at my place.
It's bizarre.
What, you guys just, I mean, in that little exchange, you referenced like three cannibal stories that I have pulled up.
We're going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're tying this all together.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. Like, people at home who listen to this podcast, you think that this is all just random.
Mm-mm.
We sit, we plan, we weave together a story for you so that you can be properly entertained.
That's right. So do we want to get into more of this wonderful sociologist work?
Yeah, I bet you did. I eat a baby.
Thank you, Louie.
Apparently, and also that baby meat on a human baby is so tender. It would be, you could compare it to the same texture as fish, that if you ate a baby's succulent ass, it would just
eat. A very small part of the baby, the butt.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But that's where you want to do it, or you chew on its arms.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would do.
Suck its brain out of its skull. Yeah. You can do that,
you
too.
You can do that with a straw.
It's like a soft-boiled egg where you just saw the top and then you just like quick mix up the brains. Could have put some raw garlic in there and just...
Right. Yeah, hit
human
it on the
brains.
Head with a spoon a couple of times. It sounds very, very tasty. So what was?
I like this one.
Well, I do love this one too.
Live from your grave.
Dahmer started giving him all kinds of weird details. He said that what he used to cook them with, he used vegetables, mushrooms, onions, and they said that during the month before they caught him, that was the only meat that he ate.
Yeah, and he said a lot of things. It's just so. And then I still love Patrick Kennedy just being mystified with it. To say, he had a lot of lovers. There's lovers walking around that I see sometime in Milwaukee that I know got fucked by Jeffrey Dahmer. But he didn't kill him because he only killed the ones that he thought were really, truly the most beautiful.
Yeah, and that's what he said. He said he only ate the ones that were truly beautiful to him.
Yeah.
And he only killed and kept parts of the ones that he thought were, as in his eyes, the perfect specimen of a man.
Yes, because like the other thing we talk about, too, is on the search for the ultimate orgasm, you know? And it's like all this other shit.
Yeah, speaking of which, he ejaculated into torn open rib cages. He draped himself with the bloody entrails.
He really got creative.
Yeah, he was having a good time. Yeah.
I've never had so good at... I guess the only thing I could really put it is eating Chinese food alone.
That's a good
That's
time.
That's like me, where
Love
it's like you're
that.
Covered in sauce, you know, no shirt on.
That's pretty
great.
You
know, like, it's just me watching Aqua Teen, just smoking a blunt, eating Chinese food. That's the only thing I can say is equivalent to Jeffrey Dahmer with these bodies.
Dahmer's living this whole other, like, 80s sci-fi movie just covered in human entrails with his arms raised in a V, I'm sure.
You know, because, and also working at the chocolate factory, some of these guys got improv troupes and they got stuff going on the side, like a band, you know? And they asked Jeffrey what he does, and he's just like, I occupy myself.
I stay busy. I promise you that.
Yeah, crafts. I like crafts.
Crafts, I mean costumes.
Just smearing blood all over his face in sort of a Native American pattern, just speaking to himself in the bathroom mirror.
all this old shit too. What a time. He started, this is again Patrick Kennedy, he started saving the heads. A lot of times he said he'd pull out the heads, you know, because there were, what he was trying to do is try, if there was a while where he was trying to prevent himself from killing.
Yeah.
So he'd use his trophies.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, we found 7 heads in the refrigerator. He'd pull them out, talk to them, stick his dick in their mouth. We found a couple of penises he'd just suck on, you know? He said he'd do this to try to satisfy himself so he wouldn't have to keep going out and killing people. Right. And I asked him, I was like, Jeff, why didn't you just go get a boyfriend? Why the fuck do you have to kill everybody? And then you look at Jeffrey Dahmer into his blue eyes, you didn't see the fucking devil. You know what I'm saying? You saw, at least I saw, a pathetic human being who was so hedonistically selfish that all they could think about was the pursuit of his own sexual pleasures.
And this is why Nutrisystem doesn't work. You know, you can't have
a drink to substitute a meal.
That's yeah. right. You can't have a shake for a steak. Doesn't yeah. work. Can't have a fake penis or a severed human penis for a human penis
attached.
Once
we can get some severed human penises in pill forms, we'll be able to cure sure. these serial killers.
So the trial comes up. This trial, they said that his court appearances, they had the air of a movie premiere. They was, yeah. It was huge. Said it had the biggest security measures ever seen in a U.S. courtroom. They swept it for bombs daily with sniffer dogs. There was an 8-foot wall of bulletproof glass protecting
Dahmer. Now, we went out there. Now, we deputized the state's biggest pigs, and we put them all on the outside there.
But the problem is that guys kept killing the pigs in order to make sausages out.
Barbecue, yeah, barbecue detective, they were calling them.
Well, I know anyone out there who was, I guess, at any age in which you actually paid attention to shit in 1992, you saw this everywhere.
Everywhere.
Every day you saw Jeffrey. I was talking to, you know, one of my assistants here. He was born in like 89, and he had no idea what Jeffrey Dahmer looked like. Well, and that also fucking mystified me. I couldn't believe that someone could know what Dahmer looked like.
This is so huge, too. You know what I mean? Like, The Tonight Show was making fun of him. SNL was making fun of him. And, like, all this stuff was happening. He became, well, as we know, that's why it's important to the serial killer fucking oeuvre is that he's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the number one killer.
Everyone's heard of Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yes.
At one point or another.
He did a lot of stuff to earn the reputation, though.
Oh, he's the jack of all trades. I mean, you look at someone like Michael Jordan or, LeBron James, you got to rebound, you got to pass, you got to shoot, and you got to win the big game. Yeah. You know? And he did everything.
That's awesome, but yeah, you got to win in the postseason. Yeah.
He made human zombies. He raped, he killed, he ate. He did everything.
He did everything.
Every single thing.
Yeah. And he, of course,
he didn't have sex with a woman.
Yeah.
Which he never had sex with a woman.
He did not.
Yeah. If he wants to, you know, go through some trials, he should try getting married.
Yeah. That would be tough.
See if he can survive getting married. Yeah.
It's pretty easy to kill your boyfriend, but try being married for 10 years. That's it. From
your grave. To be honest, I don't know many killers. Like, tell me if I'm wrong, that really switched back and forth between, like, men and women. Most of them do one or the other.
Well, Ramirez was just a slash-and-go kind of guy.
Yeah.
Well, he would kill the husband in order to get to the woman. Like, that was, right. that was his objective was the woman. The same thing with, like, you know, and John Wayne Gacy was all about little boys because it was hiding his sexuality. I think that's what makes Chikatilo specifically so fucked up and dangerous is the fact that he was just about the violence.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with him. It's got nothing to do with the sex at all.
No. And speaking of the violence, let's get into what he actually did to the victims. He ripped open their stomachs. He sliced off their sexual organs in most cases. He would slice off penises, testicles,
right.
And nipples, and then he would chew on them. He would never eat them. He'd never swallow them.
He actually made a big deal in his confession when he was saying, he was like, I do not eat. I'm not a cannibal. I just like to chew on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he said his main obsession was the uterus.
Yeah, yeah.
Main obsession was the uterus, and he said, I did not want to bite them so much as chew them. They were beautiful and elastic.
They got
to
get Wrigley's over there. You got to get some good spearmint gum. Save some lives.
It's the problem with the gum shortage, because also it's him following around like some little girl. He's just like, I happen to like the ones that taste like watermelon.
Oh, yeah. He's looking for that apple strawberry combination. It's difficult to find in a human being.
Yeah, because there's not as much of a Wrigley's as they're more of a gusher.
Right, right. Yeah, that good clean feeling that you get from Orbitz or eating someone's liver.
Another thing that he would do to all of his, or almost all of his victims, is that he would cut out their eyes. That he would at the very least stab the eyes, either around the eyes or specifically in the eyes, or cut them out completely, because it was said, there was a superstition, that the a dead person's last images were burned on their retinas. And right. he believed that his image was burned on their retinas. And who knows if that was, you know, some crazy thing that he thought maybe he'd get caught through some Soviet super magic. Or right, yeah. or if he just was superstitious about it.
I think he's real dumb.
Just also how often brutal murder happens in Russia that they like right. they had to make this rule to stop it of just being like, you know, it's like you got to stop murdering because the eye it takes pictures of your face, so yeah. just, you know, make sure to not do that, huh?
I feel like you put
guys, we need to cut it down because we could literally cannot keep together a children's choir. They keep getting murdered so hard.
Right. That's what's so sad.
Well, it was actually the eyes that was able. That's what made investigators notice that this guy wasn't just murdering in Rostov, but he was murdering all around the, I guess it would be the Western Soviet Union.
Yeah.
The eyes is what links it all together.
Did he take the eyes out before he murdered him, or was it a post-mortem thing?
Well, that's the big thing about Chikatilo, is that as he killed more and more, his killing procedures became more and more surgical. And in fact, he got so good at killing that he was able to stab, that he knew if he stabbed someone at a certain place and at a certain angle, he knew where the blood would spurt, and he knew how to dodge it. So he wouldn't get as bloody during his kills.
Like Neo from The Matrix?
Yes.
He's just bending
yes.
over backwards?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And he knew how to keep them alive for as long as possible, to prolong the suffering for as long as possible.
So he did. So that's very interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it's like kind of like the guidance counselor tells you. It's just being like, if you had $1 million, what would you want to do with your life?
Right.
You know what I mean? And Chikatilo just did that. He just did it. He took the bull by the horns, and he carpe diem'd his way into killing all these little girls.
You don't need to go to the university to become a doctor. No, you don't. And I want to thank you, Henry, for putting that Bare Naked Ladies song in my head, if I had $1 million. But now it's about Chikatilo stabbing somebody's eyes out.
Chikatilo.
If I had $1 million, I'd take a child into the woods and murder them. Okay. You can do that for free, you know. Oh, all right.
Seriously? Oh, you mean, wait, seriously?
Yeah, dude, you can just go do that whatever you want.
Like today?
Yeah, dude, whatever. You don't even need it. You don't need it.
So I hate to cut lunch short, but I'm going to go follow my dreams.
I think we made him a murderer today.
So as far as identifying the bodies goes, because this, the manhunt, oh, we're going to get into the manhunt that lasted 12 years, extremely inept, very, very, the Russians were very, very bad at what they did.
Yeah, they just wrangled up any slowpoke in the town.
Well, we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Infuriating.
The other problem is it was the big nets that they would just kind of just drag along the streets hoping to catch men in them.
But their job was definitely made more difficult, especially in the early days, because in the early days, most of Chikatilo's victims were tramps, prostitutes, people that had not, they didn't have a propiska.
Which right.
A propiska, that's a formal registration of residence. So if someone didn't have that, if they were homeless or just kind of slept around, they were, you know, pretty much a stray dog. No one cared about them
right.
at all. So when they found these bodies, you know, of course, when you investigate a murder, the first thing you do is identify the body and look around at what they did before they were murdered. But with Andrei Chikatilo, many times this was impossible.
Because there was just no more evidence of what the person looked like.
Yeah, well, there was no more evidence of what they looked like, and
right.
there was no identification on the people whatsoever. So
he didn't write their names on their backs.
Did not
keep tabs.
he did not, and of course, like he spent all of his time in railway stations, and he, much like Gary Ridgway, he started to see himself as an exterminator of
humankind.
At
some point, if you work in a railway station and you just see the same person there every single day, ask him where he's going.
Yeah.
And where are you going, buddy? It just seems like you should be getting a ticket or something.
Right. You've been here. You've been in the same spot for a month and a half. It's a train station.
I'm
you got to go.
I'm looking at the human rats because I want to turn them into dog food.
That's fine. All right.
Whatever you want to do, buddy, but just get on the train. You know?
Do it on the train.
Yeah, and people did notice him throughout the years.
Right.
Of course they did.
Yeah.
Because, but again, the problem is, it's again, nobody cares about these prostitutes. And that's where
right.
this amalgamation of sexual tension, inadequacy, a sense of superiority is what made him the fucking perfect killer. Because he just, because all you have to do it's so fucked up, but it's like lower your standards and like get to a point of just being like, I'm going to kill this strata of human being that no one looks for. And eventually you become like, because it probably started as just because they were the easiest ones. They would mm-hmm. come with him. They would go out into the forest with him. But then he began to despise them for that.
Yeah, I don't even think it's lower. Like, I don't think it's lowering your standards. I think he's raising his ego and he's like, I'm God of these people. And again, everyone likes to feel as if they're doing good.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, everybody does. Even the most sick people, he thinks that he is eradicating a plague.
Yeah. He said they followed me like dogs.
The guys who invented Twinkies were just trying to make a funner bread.
And how many people have they killed? Thousands.
Well, by December of 82, he completely... This is another thing that makes Chikatilo special, or maybe just makes the Soviet Union fucked up. In December of 82, he started killing people of higher... So he started killing children. He killed this girl, Olga Stolmachinok. He picked her up at a bus stop, took her to the woods, and murdered her. They didn't find her body for 4 months, and then only by chance. But in the interval, the police received a message. It was addressed to parents of missing child. It read,
"Greetings, parents. Don't get upset. She is not the first and not the last. Before New Year, we need another 10. If you want to find her, then search among the leaves. On the Vodorovsky Podolsky."
And it was signed
Sadist. The Black Cat.
The Black Cat. That's as badass as you can get. The Black Cat. Sounds like you're about...
Never trust the Black Cat. Or I cross your path. I swipe at your pant leg with my claws. I kill the girl and I chew on the uterus. Oh, Black Cat having fun.
All right. You know, I like everything except for Black Cat. Maybe we can call you the Ravenous Beaver. How does that sound? Black Cat.
The Corn and the Cob Killer.
Oh, that's a great one.
Him just biting all around the sides of their torsos.
Unfortunately, the letter was a hoax. But, you know, I couldn't pass that up.
No,
absolutely.
But it is a part of the story because that letter was a part of the investigation for many, many years.
And it's sort of similar to the Zodiac, you know, these people who are like faking it. Yeah. He's a real celeb now.
Yeah,
he's in the papers.
Like, he didn't even know about the letter until they arrested him because it was almost like the Zodiac. Like it was this weird piece of the puzzle that no one could really figure out.
Because, crimes were happening everywhere.
Yeah.
It was all over. It was all over Russia, like all that whole Rostov area. They had a wide area of who could be doing it because there was a bunch of different clues, especially because it seemed like he was becoming a surgeon, so they started thinking he was a doctor. And then they started thinking maybe he was a cop because he knew how the cops were operating. And so it could have been everything. Anyway,
that's how bad, again, that's how bad Russia was. They legitimately thought it could be a doctor.
how good was a slaughterhouse worker.
Right.
But still, doctor could be.
It's not the Black Dahlia murders, for Christ's sake. I'm sure these murders weren't that unbelievably artistic or scalpel-like.
And the poor sadist Black Cat was just like a guy named Javar wearing like a cat, like costume hat, like in an old shack. Like,
no one will believe that I am a cat. How I wish that I could just jump from tree branch to tree branch.
Black Cat is terrifying, actually. Now that I think about it, it is very scary.
Yeah, just a big drunk Russian man hanging out in the sun, just slowly blinking at people.
Okay, walk faster. I think we still have a Black Cat. Maybe that's where the myth comes from. If a Black Cat crosses your path, you have bad luck.
Just a fat Russian man.
Because
the Black Cat man of the village may accidentally pee all over your shoes.
No, he's just marking. He's just marking his territories. It's fine.
My sister is the best gift giver I've ever met. Of any person. It's Jackie Zabrowski. She shops all year thinking about her family and friends and puts little things aside for their birthdays and Christmases. I have no idea how she does it. I don't know how she do it. But guess what? She always wins Mother's Day, but not this year. I'm coming back. Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? I'm taking the crown. All right, give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. I mean this. We have the Aura frame up in my home. We absolutely love it. I can put photos on it very, very easily through the app. It's fun to do. And the memories keep cycling and I get emotional. And we filled it with pictures of Carmi and Wendy. And that is not sad. That is celebratory. So you should try it. It's honestly a really good product. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code LEFT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
Live from your grave.
Another plant that he did to try to ferret out the real killer was to put a fake notice in the New York Daily Mirror gossip column that brought Fish out of hiding. Famed gossip columnist Walter Winchell wrote on his column On Broadway,
"I checked on the Grace Budd mystery. She was 8 when she was kidnapped about 6 years ago, and it is safe to tell you that the Department of Missing Persons will break the case, or they expect to, in 4 weeks.
One could also argue, why am I writing about this? I'm on Broadway and shouldn't be discussing ongoing criminal investigations. Tell me more about cats, you ask? It's the summer special.
It's a musical about talking cats.
Anyway, back to Grace Budd, the brutal murder.
I heard they cut off her vagina.
Back to cats.
10 days after that notice was written in the Daily Mirror, Albert Fish wrote the infamous Grace Budd letter. Now, anyone with even a passing fascination with serial killers has read this at some point. Nevertheless, here it is once again in part.
On Sunday, June the 3rd, 1928, I called on you at 406 West 15th Street. Brought you pot cheese, strawberries. We had lunch. Grace sat in my lap and kissed me. I made up my mind to eat her. On the pretense of taking her to a party, you said yes, she could go. I took her to an empty house in Westchester I had already picked out. When we got there, I told her to remain outside. She picked wildflowers. I went upstairs and stripped all my clothes off. I knew if I did not, I would get her blood on them. When I was all ready, I went to the window and called her. Then I hid in a closet until she was in the room. When she saw me all naked, she began to cry and tried to run down the stairs. I grabbed her, and she said she would tell her mama. First, I stripped her naked. How she did kick, bite, and scratch. I choked her to death, then cut her in small pieces so I could take my meat to my rooms. Cook and eat. How sweet and tender her little ass was roasted in the oven. It took me 9 days to eat her entire body. I did not fuck her, though. I could have if I had I wished it. She died a virgin.
Now, thankfully, Mrs. Budd was illiterate. Mm.
God. The only Christ. Time that ever saved a life.
That yeah. is nice.
Thank Christ. Yeah, she was illiterate. Unfortunately, Edward Budd was not. Her older brother, the boy, the one who had originally...
Had to read everything.
The boy who originally had put in the ad that brought Albert Fish to their home was the one who received and read the letter.
Yeah, because you've just been trolled for years by people writing shitty letters to them.
Yeah, I mean, it's been years and years. But when Edward Budd read this letter, he called up Detective King and said, I think this is real. King read the letter and he was like, holy shit, yeah, I think this is actually something true. He thought, okay, finally, yeah, a clue, something to go on.
But an incredible police work.
This is amazing police work.
The thing that would lead the police to Fish, it wasn't the letter, but it was the envelope that the letter was in.
Yeah, it was stamped on the back, was an emblem with the initials NYPCBA, a.k.a. the New York Private Chauffeurs Benevolent Association.
Very similar, again, going back to BTK, what happened with him and how they were identified. They identified him through the fingerprint of his floppy disk.
Yeah,
very dumb. Yeah. Very dumb way to get caught, yes.
Yeah. So the envelope was eventually traced to a boarding house at 200 East 52nd Street. Detective King gave a description of Frank Howard to the landlady, who said it perfectly matched a boarder named Albert Fish, who had moved out only days before.
Who was the boarder that testified in the trial that said he left the little mess behind him.
Yes.
Yeah, so yeah. She had reason to remember him.
Yeah. And as another little side note, it is worth noting that the address where Fish wrote the Grace Budd letter describing cannibalism is now, no shit, the site of an edible arrangements franchise.
Well, that's not good for them. They should have thought that. They should have rethought about building a little business there.
Technically, Albert Fish's visit to the Bud House was sort of a edible arrangement.
It kind of was. We'll let it slide.
Yeah. Yes. Feel good.
Well, anyway, even though Fish no longer lived at that address, he was still due to pick up a check sent from his son. And when Fish returned to pick up the check, the landlady called Detective King, who told her to stall Fish until he got there.
Just wonder how she stalled him.
Well, that's what I was kind of thinking, too. Like, what do you, like...
What do you do to keep a man's attention like that? She's just like, you want to spank yourself with this newspaper?
Yeah, I got some cheese. You want to put your butt in it?
Yeah.
All right. Detective, I got him laughing. Get over here quickly.
Live from your grave.
On April 4th, one of the investigators, a man named Slay, walked by the workshop and noticed a stench coming from one of the big chest freezers. After digging through a layer of frost, they found 2 5-gallon plastic buckets. Slay shined his flashlight inside the first bucket and found a human head cut in half vertically through the face.
Do you think they cut the head in half because it's easier to put in the bucket, or is it because what you do with pigs? Because they cut the head in half to get to the face meat if you're going to make like head cheese, if you're going to make all that, and the brains are used for a lot of stuff.
It was because it was like a pig. It was exactly. He butchered these women the exact same way that he butchered pigs, right down to the cutting of the head, down the vertebrae, down the middle of the body. Like, he was just right. He was doing it how he knew it. He was doing it how he knew to do it.
All right.
But that wasn't the only thing in there. Inside one half of the head, in the cranial cavity, they found 2 severed hands. And stacked underneath was the other half of the head. But inside this half was 2 feet.
Jeez.
The second bucket held the same exact configuration.
My goodness gracious.
Now, forensics found more body parts near the old piggery in the cistern.
Uh-oh.
A sewage company pumped the damn thing for 4 days before it was empty because Willie had never emptied it.
Oh. He's like Cousin God. Ed from Christmas Vacation.
Yeah. Oh, the shitter's full.
Oh, my God.
And then after investigators pumped out all of this pig sewage, they had to sift through all of it hand.
So we're talking like 30 years of pig crap?
Many years of pig shit.
Oh, God.
It just sounds like losing an engagement ring in Shanghai, like in one of the public toilets.
Yeah, good luck.
But it was worth it. You know, they found a human jawbone in there.
For one guy it was. Some guy probably loved it. The creature of Mud Creek, perhaps, loved it there.
Now, it can't be understated how huge of an operation this really was. There were over 100 people working there, day and night, for years, sifting through Willie's farm, piece by piece by piece.
I do just imagine someone like waking up really early for sewage day and be like, there's something wrong with you, Todd. But in this case, that's a skill. Now get on in there. I've been waiting to swim in human sewage for my whole life.
There's nothing that interests me more than being covered absolutely up to my fucking eyelashes in pure human waste.
Well, Todd, you get in there. I'm out to lunch. I gotta go. I mean, you get in there.
Now, these people, they had to, I mean, they had to search through every rock. You know, they had to search through all these troughs, right. And they had these huge conveyor belts that they would have to go through and search piece by piece. They would sift through all this dirt and go piece by piece by piece.
It's like a disgusting scene from I Love Lucy.
Yeah. Yeah, they searched through about 40 bone pits.
Oh, God.
Bone pits.
Bone pits, yeah, because that you had to put the dead stock somewhere.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, you have to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And they had to separate every bone fragment to see what was human and what wasn't. And they found a healthy mix of both in every bone pit. But there is a mystery when it comes to the bodies, a mystery that endures to this day. No one knows what he did with the leg and arm bones. Mm. It's unlikely that he disposed of them at the rendering plant, as those are pretty recognizable as human. But not even a piece of one was found on the farm. But no one knows what he did with the leg and arm bones, but then there was evidence that was almost just out in the open. One pail in the slaughterhouse was stuffed with human remains, and nearby was the head of Mona Wilson, sawed in the half like all the others. But the most disturbing discovery of all was still to come. On July 15th, 2002, two officers were searching a further two freezers when they found three plastic bags full of ground meat.
Oh, shit.
The bags were put into storage for 4 months until someone finally tested them, and they found that the ground meat was pork
and people.
Oh, my. So this was like, honestly, this was fed to human beings. This was like they were making sausage out of this stuff.
This ground meat matched two women. One who had disappeared in early 2001 one who had gone missing 4 years before in 1998. That's not healthy. That it is possible, if not probable, that for at least the previous 4 years, Willie had been grinding up at least some of his victims and mixing the meat in with hogs he'd butchered.
He definitely was.
And investigators found that Willie had given meat to over 40 friends, relatives, and associates in this period of time. Willie had also helped out another friend grind, package, and sell about 300 pounds of meat every month to small butcher shops around Vancouver.
All right.
And yet, even though investigators knew all of this, they did not issue a public health warning about possible human meat being on the market for another 2 years.
Well, you want to keep it under wraps here because
because what are you going to say? What are you going to do?
Coquitlam and Port Coquitlam, I hate to break it to you. Now, that lovely sausage you've been enjoying... It's just sausage. We're not going to ruin this for them.
I was going to say it. And you could just see him be like, and now, and just, I want to say in unity with the people of Port Coquitlam, I will now eat this human foot. Now, I know that this is, I don't know where we got this foot. I'm not asking questions, right? Right, Sergeant Lansky? Mm. No questions asked. I am going to eat this foot so I also know what it's like. And... honestly, it's quite good. I will say,
this
honestly,
is unbelievable.
I think that the reason why he did it and ground it up, like, yes, obviously he had some sort of sick shit inside of him. Of course, he's a fucking monster. I bet you he was doing it to pad his fucking counts. That he had so much extra meat that he knew that we're saving money on pigs by putting the human meat in with the pork meat. And because they're so similar, that this was about money and convenience and not just about being a depraved maniac.
All right. What about the rendering plant, though? Did they shut that thing down?
No, of course not.
Well, why didn't I don't understand how any of this... This is 2001, 2002?
2002, yeah.
This is like modern time. What is happening?
You can't shut down the rendering plant.
Shut it down.
Where are you going to get your Mike and Ike's?
Yeah, dude, Mike and Ike's. Think about the contouring craze that's happening on Instagram right now. Mm-hmm. That is fueled by the human meat
gelatin that is being used by makeup companies right now.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
After they had dinner, went to the beer garden, Peter Curtin led Maria Hahn out to a deserted meadow and began the longest, cruelest, most drawn-out murder of his career. He strangled her until she passed out. Then, when she woke up, he did it again.
BTK.
Jesus.
When she came to once more, Curtin stabbed her in the throat with his scissors, and when the blood gushed forth, he pressed his mouth to the wound and drank her blood until he vomited.
Oh, so this is, again, with the scissors. I guess he really, even though it was a fail the first time he used the scissors.
Scissors become a favorite of his.
Oh,
yes,
my God.
Because, and I think it's no mistake, I think he's doing it on purpose, is that he do these. He did a pointed, specific puncture. Mm-hmm. Like he would do in order to get a spurt of blood.
And even then, Maria was still alive. As she begged for her life, Curtin stabbed her in the chest, then repeatedly stabbed her in the head until she mercifully slipped away. Mm. Curtin said the whole process had taken an hour.
Jeez.
So after Maria was dead, Curtin rolled her body into a ditch and threw some branches over for cover. When he got home that night, his wife was already asleep, but the next morning, she immediately noticed quite a few bloodstains on Curtin's clothes.
So here we have some bloodstains.
Right, yeah. Right.
Now, the two got into a fight about it, so Peter figured he'd better actually hide this body, lest it be discovered and his wife would make the connection between the bloodstains and the murder of Maria Hahn.
Because she starts blaming me for death, the next thing I know, I don't get my tuna fish casserole on Fridays.
And that's not good. So this is the first time that she... Is this the first time that she suspects that he is doing something nefarious when he leaves?
I guess so.
Well, this is the first time that there's actually evidence. Okay. That he's like, come home and she's seen like, there's bloodstains on your clothes, what have you been doing? And he'd been out all night long, too.
It must be a lot of blood, right?
It's a fair amount of blood, yeah. So, once again, after work, Curtin went home, grabbed a shovel, and headed back out to the crime scene where he picked up Maria's body, took it to a fallow cornfield, and buried her in a deep grave, relishing the act the entire time.
Mm. It's kind of like when you go like down the different block when you want to go to the grocery store and you get the nice cup of coffee from the new hipster coffee shop, and you're like, why don't I do this all the time?
Yeah. Interesting. Well, it's totally different. This involves
because
a homicide.
If I
your analogy involves coffee, and this is a murder.
Because if my analogies did involve me talking openly about the several murders of women that I would have had to have done to know the distinct pleasures of doing this, then I would be incriminating myself, wouldn't I, Benjamin Kissel?
That's a good point. Keep talking about coffee.
But Curtin wasn't done yet. A few weeks later, he said he returned to Maria's grave and dug up the body with the intention of nailing it to a tree in a mock crucifixion. But the body was too heavy, so he just reburied it. But the thing was, he could not let his work go unnoticed. If nobody found the desecrated body, then in his mind, the job was only half finished, and there was ultimately no point. It's like, in Peter's mind, it's like it never happened.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. So in November, he sent letters that gave the exact location of the body to several newspapers, making sure to tell them that the perpetrator of this crime was indeed the Vampire of Dusseldorf. And in that letter, he gave them the exact location of Maria Hahn's body.
Hmm.
This is the one. I wish I could have found the actual copy of the letter.
I couldn't find it. Yeah.
I couldn't find it. I don't know if it's because they don't have the same obsession with serial killers, except now we know that. But I feel like at the time, nowadays, we blow it up into like a media frenzy, or in the 70s and shit, during the serial killer heyday of the United States of America.
I don't know. Remember what we were saying last episode? Yeah.
They love true crime, but I wonder... But that was after the facts of the crime. I wonder if at the time the newspapers did not want to blow it up as much. I know they were trying to keep a lid on as much information as they could. They actually, it seems like in Germany at the time, they were better at it than we ever were.
Yeah.
Well, there was a little World War II. And it was quite alarming. Maybe it got exploded.
Yeah,
it could have gotten exploded.
I mean, everything sort of got destroyed. So maybe that was one of them. I don't know.
Actually, you make a very good point there. Quite a few records of Germany were destroyed in that time. And it could also have been, you know, destroyed by the Nazis, who were doing their best to erase the past of Germany as much as they possibly could. But that's not to say that Peter Curtin wasn't still killing in the meantime between the murder in August and him sending the letter in November.
Hmm.
In fact, as I said earlier, the Maria Hahn murder kicked off what was to be the most vicious and prolific spree of Peter Curtin's life. Mm. Later on, in the same week that he killed Maria Hahn, Peter Curtin approached 26-year-old Gertrude Schulte as she was on her way to meet up with a few friends for an afternoon lark.
I am not maligning whatsoever, but it's always interesting when you remember Gertrudes were young once.
Yeah.
When we think of the name Gertrude, it's just such an older name. When 26-year-old Gertrude, you never even think about that.
No, when I was a kid, Gertrude was the name of the old witch that my grandfather said lived in the abandoned house far into the ranch.
Meanwhile, you know, back in the day when Gertrude had that snapper out there and she was letting her, when she was hanging him high and all that stuff, back in the day, Gertrude was hot.
Yeah,
I feel like it's how it always is.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's coming back around. Everybody's named Mildred and Berthel and stuff like that. And now we're going to have 80-year-old Nicolettes and Allisons.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I just can't wait until nursing homes are filled with Stephanies and Ashleys.
Yes.
Oh, that's fine. I will name my kid Herbert. Herb. I like that name. It's my grandfather's name.
Oh, Herbert's a Herb is a real good name.
Yeah.
Herb Kessel.
Herb Kessel.
Yeah,
mine's, you know, he's a good farmhand.
Mine's going to be Skeletons.
You're going to name your kids Skeletons?
Yeah, multiple Skeletons.
You think
Skeletons.
That's going to be good for them going through life being named Skeletons?
They better start working hard in order to get over what has already been done to them.
That is the premise of A Boy Named Sue.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Live from your grave.
So after Lemuel Murphy ate the mouse, he started attacking everyone else, biting on their arms and just yelling one thing over and over and over again.
Give me my bone! Give me my bone!
Just biting on her, saying, give me my bone! Give me my bone!
Give me my bone!
Yeah.
When did he turn into a shaggy dog?
He died at 2 a.m. And his body was rolled out of the circle into the snow. There were now three bodies laying in the Forlorn Hopes camp. And that's when the cannibalism started.
Yay! He did it!
That's when the cannibalism started.
I said it. I said the thing. I said the thing.
He said the line.
And that's when the cannibalism started.
I said the line. I did what you
that's
wanted me to do.
That's from the intro of the show.
I know it is. I did the thing
Rise
they
from
wanted
your
me
grave.
To do.
And that's when the cannibalism started. Cannibalism started.
Yeah, I remember these.
Cool. I love it. Awesome.
So the morning after Murphy's death, it was decided there was no other choice, so they began butchering the three bodies that lay frozen in their camp.
Okay.
So they did have to choose. So they had to organize who was going to get who.
Okay.
Because no one wanted to eat a member of their own family.
Jeez.
Yeah. First, they removed the heads, hands, and feet of the cadavers, which is common among cannibals as it helps to dehumanize the meat.
They seem pretty good at it, like right off the bat.
Well, I mean, it's almost like a, again, like a primordial type of urge, like because you're looking at it and you're thinking like, I can't eat a person, so I've got to make this look less like a person.
That's why I don't like going to pig roast where the pig is actually on a spit, because it's horrifying.
Yeah, yeah, it makes you feel weird. Yeah.
No, not me, man. It's the opposite. I like seeing the face.
I know, I know.
I don't understand. That's what a real, that's a non-hypocrite's way of looking at me. I like seeing the feet.
I actually will agree. I am a hypocrite when it comes to that.
They then opened the torso and brought out the liver, heart, and kidneys. Ooh. And those, that's, and of course, like, that's the most likely thing to do because that's the most nutritious meat by this point because their muscles are all gone.
Right. Mm.
Three of the survivors were either the sibling or spouse of each of the deceased, so the party divided into three groups so no one would accidentally eat the flesh of their kin.
Whew.
They found some dry firewood, and the meat was roasted on sharpened stakes.
What they said, too, is that, again, their hunger pains had sort of left.
Right.
And so, for a while, this was like, they were doing this rote butchering, and it felt like butchering an animal, so it was a little bit more like, oh, okay, we can do this, it was fine, but it was slow going. But they said when the smell of the cooking meat hit their noses, they became ravenous with hunger. Because, I mean, it just smells like fucking beef, sweet, delicious
pork,
beautiful pork meat.
Yeah, interesting.
The only ones who didn't partake in the meat were Louis and Salvador. Because they looked at this whole thing like, this is an abomination of the highest order.
Right, right.
So the forlorn hope sat in the snow and ate, all of them avoiding eye contact and weeping at what they had to do to survive.
Wow.
Now, it is true that they would have probably survived a couple more weeks without the human flesh before they starved to death. But before we judge, it is almost assured they would not have had the energy to continue. They just would have sat around that fire trying to find dry firewood until they just starved to death.
Well, this is a small exaggeration, but not that much of an exaggeration. When I was 380 pounds, I did sit in a Ponderosa booth after about my fifth plate, and I did begin to cry. Because it got quite sad.
That was it's one a of little those, different.
Yeah, it was one of those aha moments, and then I realized I couldn't tie my shoes. And that's another moment I realized I had to lose
some
weight.
This is like the opposite. This is the complete opposite of the Donner Party.
Yes, it is. Eating while fat is actually sad. Well, obese is actually sadder than... I don't know if that's true, but I've eaten some sad times.
So after the butchering, they got a little bit of luck. The snow stopped and the temperature dropped, meaning the snow was easier to walk on.
Okay.
So they cut long strips of flesh from the deceased and dried them over a fire for the further journey.
Mm.
In the end, only 4 days' worth of meat could be harvested from the starved bodies, and still, there were weeks left to go.
Jeez.
That is kind of what they have brought up in the book that was interesting. It was like the way he said it, way Brown said it, it was almost a little suspicious. He was like, if you really look at the stats of Franklin Graves, you'd expect a yield of 66 pounds.
No, I remember that passage, and I remember thinking, like, I really respect this guy for doing the math.
Yes.
Like,
well, I mean,
like,
I guess
he called somebody up. He asked him how much meat it would yield. I respected it.
Yeah. So maybe they weren't very good at getting the meat off the bones.
No. Think of it this way. Like, compare it to the Uruguayan rugby team that crashed in the Andes in the 70s, yes, alive and all that. Those guys were all athletes. They were a rugby team.
Right.
So there was quite a bit of very good meat left on those guys. So they were able to get some choice cuts, not to be too indelicate.
Right.
But they were able to get some pretty choice cuts of meat from these guys. The Donner Party, by the time they had started to butcher, you know, Franklin Graves and such and the other two, there was very little meat left on their bones.
So you think that organized sports would have really helped out?
Because
they had a little bit more muscle.
But it's also the proper diets. They had been walking for 2,000 miles. They had gump bodies. They had that, like, the long muscles of walking for a long time, and they've not been eating a lot of fat. So that without fat in the meat, you can't properly process the nutrients in the meat.
Yep.
Right.
So it's very, very dry.
Oof.
Now, after the meat ran out, the only thing they had left to eat were their shoes.
Jeez.
So they roasted their shoes and then moved on totally barefoot. And what's more, a lot of them barely had any clothes on their back at all because the clothes had started to rot from all the wetness. And they were walking through these tree branches constantly, and the branches, because the clothes were rotted, they just ripped more and more and more. They were half naked walking through like the Sierra Nevadas in the teens.
That's crazy.
A few days after eating their shoes, the hunger once again became too much. That's when the first mention of outright murder came.
Ooh.
William Foster was the one who suggested that the group kill and eat Louis and Salvador.
Let's kill those guys.
Interesting.
Which is just that inner, like, plotting of people pulling each other to the side, being like, you see him over there? Look at that. All right. Imagine him in a taco. Just listen. I'm being crazy. But imagine him on a salad. Like, cut up in a bitty.
Live from your grave.
All right, there it was, everyone. Hope you enjoyed this best of episode. I gotta say, when you put it all together, it seems like people only eat other people.
Well, again, it's really just about how hungry you are.
Yeah.
Are you just a little cat in a bag?
But,
and
you know,
just want to see what's at the bottom of that bag?
Donner Party, I don't consider them cannibals as much as I do Dahmer. Because like you were talking about up top, Dahmer probably was like, I'm a little too full. But he finished off the brain or whatever.
Well, because it's going to spoil.
Donner Party, they really did need it. So they get a bit more of a pass.
Sure.
They ate down to the bone.
Well, they're very hungry. They're very, very
They were
hungry.
Very... Well, they
yeah,
had motivation.
They're gnawing on bones, yeah.
Yeah. Jeffrey Dahmer was, like, he was vacationing in the world of cannibalism, where the Donner Party, they were, like, forced to get, like, a full-time job in cannibalism.
Yes, absolutely. Well, all right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. And, thanks so much for another wonderful, it's been a wonderful year in many ways. We have to count our blessings at this time.
It's been a challenging year. It's been an interesting year, which is an unfortunate word. But I will say it's nice that we are not being consumed by humans right now. But do you remember
Unless
how we
talked
about...
Unless you are and you're listening here right now, in which case you're like, can't relate to this show anymore.
But it's like the Donner Party. Again, do you remember how often they tried to say when we were researching it, where they kept saying like, everybody says the only interesting part of this story is the cannibalism. And it's like, you're right.
Well,
no.
The wagons and the buggies and the wheels.
But
and
it was,
the wagon wish, manifest were extraordinarily interesting.
And I know I'm that you forced was, Marcus to cut all the shovel talk, and I could have gone for some more shovel talk.
I am just saying that the quarter of cannibalism, and that is the real cayenne of
it's the
dry rub.
It's the That's pepper, true. But it ain't the main course.
That's right. Mm. That's right.
Mm. Honestly,
the
I'm
main
starving.
Course is the struggles of the settlers, Henry.
I know. I'm permanently frowning. I think about them every day.
I'm gonna go fucking watch Ken Burns the West and cleanse my palate and revisit.
Well, I love it. All right, y'all, hang in there, keep on doing the best you can, and never forget, hail yourself.
Hail Satan.
Hail game.
My goostalations, everybody.
Hail me. Eat some turkey for me, you bitch.
Eat some tofurkey, eat some turkey, eat whatever you want. And you know what? What I have learned is, even if you're on a diet, have fun on Thanksgiving and eat whatever you want. And then the next day,
it's a holiday. There's no calories.
There's no calories. So then you won't feel like you missed out, and then you won't eat so much the next day. Lesson.
Okay. Thanks.
That is a lesson.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors. You can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.